Okay, picture this. A huge stadium, but instead of cheering crowds and pounding feet, you hear the buzz, the whir of motors and carbon fiber limbs moving fast. Sounds like sci-fi, right? But it actually happened. This was the first World Humanoid Robot Games in Beijing, August 2025. Some people are already calling it the Robolympics. So today, we're doing a deep dive into this event. We want to unpack what happened and pull out the key insights, really understand how this might shift robotics from labs into, well, maybe even our daily lives.
Yeah, it's fascinating how fast things are moving. And right off the bat, let's clear something up. A lot of people thought maybe Unity Robotics hosted this or it was in Hangzhou. But no, this was actually a huge state-backed event. The Beijing Municipal Government was the official organizer.
Okay, so Beijing government, not a company. And it wasn't just any venue, right?
Exactly. It was
Oh.
held mid-August 2025 at the National Speed Skating Oval in Beijing. You know, the one from the Winter Olympics. That tells you something about the scale and the level of importance placed on it.
It really does. A Winter Olympics venue. And the scale. Why, what were the numbers again?
We're talking over 500 humanoid robots, 280 different
That's
teams.
380 teams.
Yeah, from 16 countries, the US, Germany, Japan,
Yeah.
all the big players were there. And they competed across 26 categories, 538 individual competitions. It was massive.
And you mentioned the teams. It wasn't just the usual suspects, was it?
No, that's what was really interesting. You had top universities, sure, big tech companies, definitely,
Yeah.
but also middle school teams.
Middle school is seriously.
Seriously,
Yeah.
it shows this push to get people involved at all levels, maybe make the tech seem a bit more, I don't know, accessible.
Yeah, democratizing it, kind of. So, what were these robots actually doing? What kind of challenges?
Well, it was a real mix. You had the athletic stuff, sprints, long jump, gymnastics even,
Yeah.
really testing, raw power, balance, how stable they are dynamically.
Right, the flashy stuff.
Exactly. But then you also had these really practical challenges, like sorting medicine in a mock hospital setup, cleaning hotel rooms, handling materials, stuff that tests fine motor skills, navigation, things you'd actually want a robot helper to do.
So skills for the real world, not just the track.
Precisely. And they even threw in artistic performances, hip hop dancing robots, martial arts displays.
Wait, hip hop?
Yeah, and musical stuff. The opening ceremony apparently had robots dressed like terracotta warriors, some playing instruments.
Okay, that I would like to see. I did hear about one less graceful moment, though. Something about a fashion show?
Ah, yes. Apparently, a robot model took quite a tumble on the runway.
Huh. See, that makes them seem almost human. Which I guess ties into the strategy here. These little stumbles weren't necessarily bad PR.
That's a really sharp point. It seems deliberate. They learned from this previous robot marathon where some competitors famously sort of overheated, emitted smoke. Not a great look.
Right, bad optics.
So for these games, they focused on short, explosive events, maximum visual impact. They called it extreme testing. But kind of paradoxically, seeing the robots mess up, sometimes fall down, recover, like that runaway tumble,
Yeah.
it actually made them more relatable, less like perfect, scary machines.
Interesting. So the imperfection was almost part of the plan to build public acceptance. Okay, let's get technical for a second. What's actually making these robots move? What's the core tech?
Okay, so fundamentally, you need powerful muscles, right? These are high-torque electric motors. Unitree's H1, for example, its knee joint, has something like 360 newton meters of torque. That's huge. It allows for those explosive movements, keeping balance.
And they need to be light but strong.
Exactly. So lots of lightweight, high-strength stuff like carbon fiber. Then you have the brain and eyes. For perception, they use 360-degree depth sensing 3D LiDAR combined with depth cameras. Gives them a full picture of their surroundings.
Like superpowered spatial awareness.
Sort of, yeah. And then crucially, intelligent motion control. This often involves AI, like reinforcement learning, teaching the robot how to balance dynamically, how to walk, run, even how to get up after falling.
That recovery part seems key. We saw videos of that, right? Robots falling and getting back up on their own.
We did. And that points towards companies like Unitree Robotics. They were obviously a big competitor with their H1 robot. It's fast holds the bipedal speed record, I think, 3.3 meters per second.
Yeah, 1.8 meters tall, about 47 kilos. Pretty athletic build for a robot.
Very. But Unitree wasn't just competing. They were also kind of the foundation for many other teams. Lots of teams use Unitree hardware as their base platform and then added their own software, their own algorithms.
Oh, so they're enabling the whole ecosystem, not just showing off their own tech.
Exactly. Which is a smart play. It accelerates development across the board.
And this whole event, it's impossible to ignore the bigger picture, the sort of geopolitical angle, right? This is a statement.
Oh, absolutely. It's a very visible part of China's strategic push in AI and robotics.
Yeah.
It aligns perfectly with their national goals to be a leader in these fields.
And it feeds into this idea of robonomics. Can you explain that a bit?
Right, robonomics. It's the idea that these advanced robots could fundamentally change the economy. There was this calculation floating around. Imagine a humanoid robot costs, say, $5 an hour to operate.
Right.
Very.
Yeah.
Now compare that to maybe two human workers earning $25 an hour each. The analysis suggests that one robot could potentially replace those two workers and generate a net present value over its lifetime around $200,000.
Wow. That's disruptive.
It's incredibly disruptive. It forces a rethink of labor costs, productivity, the value of different kinds of work. So the games weren't just a tech demo. They were stress testing the skills needed for commercial use, signaling to the world, hey, these things are getting ready for prime time.
So wrapping this up, what's the main takeaway for you listening to this? It wasn't really about finding the single best robot, was it?
No, not at all. It was more about showcasing this whole ecosystem. Diverse robots, different strengths, pointing towards various commercial paths. Some might be great for logistics, others for care, others for exploration. It's showing that the field is maturing rapidly.
It feels like a big step towards robots moving beyond the factory floor or the lab.
Definitely. And maybe the thought to leave you with is this. What does it really mean when machines not only compete, but also learn to stumble, to fall, and crucially, to get back up again on a world stage?
How does that change our definition of achievement, and what doors does that unlock for having robots alongside us, you know, in our everyday world?
Questions we'll likely be grappling with much sooner than we think.